Welcome to Inflection Point, conversations with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Today on Inflection Point, just who does wear the pants around here?
I can't tell you how many times I've heard the story from so many women in so many different places where the story begins, you know, my husband really didn't want me to start my business, and now my husband works for me.
That's today on Inflection Point. Stay tuned. For women here and abroad, access to capital remains a huge hurdle for starting and running a business, regardless of talent or ambition. In developing countries, 70% of female-led small and medium-sized businesses cannot acquire adequate funding, if they're funded at all. According to the 10,000 Women Initiative from Goldman Sachs, this is a $300 billion opportunity. With us today is the global head of the 10,000 Women Initiative, Noah Meyer. Welcome, Noah.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell us what the 10,000 Women Initiative from Goldman Sachs is. What are you guys doing?
So 10,000 Women is a program that Goldman Sachs started in March of 2008. It was initially a $100 million commitment by the firm to provide business and management education for women-owned small businesses in developing countries. Goldman had done research. A woman by the name of Kathy Matsui, who was our senior strategist in Japan, wrote a piece of research in, I think it was 2005, that was called is called Womenomics. And it looked at how increasing labor force participation by women in the Japanese economy would boost growth in Japan. And that research has actually had a number of lives. It was published initially, and it kind of came across the desk of our CEO, as so much of the research obviously generated at the firm does. And it coincided with a moment in time when the firm was thinking about making a signature investment in kind of a big philanthropic investment globally. And this predates the financial crisis. So it was very much the focus was on globalization and how to create more opportunity for more people to benefit from the global economy. And so there was this piece of research that really showed that investing in women was not just a nice thing to do, it was a really smart thing to do. And the idea of 10,000 Women was born. So for the first 6 years, we really focused on providing business and management training to women who were running existing small businesses, not only actually business and management training, but also access to mentors and networking. And we really wanted to provide practical business education. So, you know, how to write a business plan, how to access capital, operations, negotiations, things that if you're running a business but you've never had any formal training will really help you grow that business. So we develop partnerships with about 100 academic and nonprofit partners all around the world and worked with them to recruit women who were running small businesses so they could gain this knowledge. And the women who went through the program really grew dramatically. We measured everything, as we do at Goldman Sachs, and we learned that 70% of the women were growing their businesses about a year and a half after graduating, and 60% of them were hiring more employees. And then 90% of them were mentoring other women, which did not come as a surprise to us because that was, yet again, one of the reasons that we chose women as our primary investment. But an area that kind of eluded us from the very beginning was their ability to access capital. And as we were working towards our goal of educating 10,000, because that was what we stated we were going to do for the first phase of the initiative, our CEO said, okay, great. So what's next for 10,000 women? And so we took a look at the space that we thought we really, the work that we still needed to do around access to capital. And we launched a partnership with the International Finance Corporation, which is known as sort of the private sector arm of the World Bank, and announced in March of 2014 the first ever global financing facility focused exclusively on women-owned small businesses. It will enable 100,000 women to access capital all around the world, and it will be a $600 million facility. So in partnership with the World Bank and others, we will work with banks and local markets to incentivize them to do more lending to women-owned small businesses.
So when you say facility, is I think of an actual structure. Is there a building that's being created somewhere, or what is
no,
what does that
God.
Mean?
And
what does that mean in terms of a woman who is interested in having more access to capital or learning more about how to grow their business?
So facility is, I think, a term of art in the finance world, which we should probably not use anymore. It's in essence, a mechanism for us to catalyze more lending to banks and local markets that are interested in the women's market, but may have kind of a misguided sense of the risk associated and need a little bit of financial incentive to do more lending. So our capital will help do that. So the idea is really that we work with banks in Indonesia or a bank in the Congo or a bank in China to help them figure out what it is that they need from a financial perspective to expand their book of lending to women-owned small businesses. And in fact, we just closed a deal with a bank in central China through our partnership with IFC, obviously, that really wants to do more lending to women-owned small businesses. And in China, the SME space, as it's known, is for women is very nascent. And so this is a huge opportunity for us to go into this central Chinese province and to help them understand the marketplace, because our dollars not only help takes away a little bit of the risk for the banks in their lending, but also provides training for the loan officers or helps the bank do some assessment of the market so they understand what the opportunity is. So we both provide capital, but we also provide training and assistance so the bank can really get to know the marketplace a little bit better.
And what is your role running 10,000 Women?
I am chief cook and bottle washer.
What does that translate to?
There's a team of us, a very small team of us, who we do a lot of different activities, from developing the partnerships with the different academic institutions, or now IFC, to really talking about the work that we do and kind of building on the platform of why we think investing in women is a smart investment. You know, I think Goldman, when we first entered this space, it was a space where there, I don't know that any other corporations had really identified women small business owners as kind of a growth space and a place where we could really have an impact. And in the last 8 years, we've seen a lot of other companies come into this space. And it's been a great opportunity for us to draw attention to the importance of investing in women-owned small businesses and to really, I think, contribute to a dialogue that's growing in momentum. You know, Exxon is now very involved. Coca-Cola is very involved. Walmart. I just sat next to somebody at this conference that I'm attending from FedEx. They're developing a program. And they're more corporations that are recognizing the opportunity that exists with women. And it's exciting for us to be able to contribute to that conversation in a meaningful way. So that's a big part of the work that we do. A huge part of it is obviously being at Goldman Sachs, running a program that has real impact and making sure that we're building the strongest possible programs and through the best possible partnerships. You know, that requires a lot of oversight and a lot of engagement from the team. So that's something that we all spend a lot of time on.
So it sounds like you might have already reached the goal of reaching 10,000 women.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens now? Are you going to have a new name? Do you have a new goal?
No, you know, the name 10,000 Women, we're sticking with it. It's our brand. But our goal is really to reach 100,000 through this partnership with IFC. So enabling 100,000 women to access capital. 10,000 Women is sort of our name and spirit. But our goal now is really expanded dramatically.
And are the programs available in the U.S. as well as abroad?
You know, it's interesting. The 10,000 Women, when we first launched, and, you know, as I mentioned before, it was sort of the firm's first signature philanthropic initiative, which had a global focus. But we did initially have a domestic partnership with Mills College here in San Francisco. So it's since we've spun off a sister program called 10,000 Small Businesses, which is a domestic program. So it's for U.S. and U.K. men and women small business owners. And that's really the firm's focus domestically is through small businesses.
With regard to the focus on women everywhere else, you had mentioned that there are specific benefits associated with investing in women. Can you illuminate us on what some of those advantages are?
You know, there's been a lot of research that's been done by Goldman, by the World Bank, by so many others that looks at how women take their earnings and invest it back in their families and their communities. They invest in education. They invest in healthcare. you know, men tend to, according to this research, tend to often spend their earnings, and this is a vast generalization, but we are talking about research, in alcohol, in cars, in things that are not as focused, it's not as family friendly, I think it's fair to say. So I think the thinking really is very much that investing in women is an investment in the long-term health of families and communities. And I think that's something that the research that we've done and the research Womenomics showed about how increasing labor force participation can really boost growth. So it's on a micro level, and on a broader macro level, there's a huge opportunity.
So are these opportunities for women, they're creating them for themselves? Goldman Sachs 10,000 Women is facilitating their access to capital and education about growing their businesses. Are these women who might not otherwise have employment in these countries? What do you know about that?
Well, you know, it's less about employment, I think, from our perspective, and more really about giving the women the skills and the tools they need to grow their businesses to generate more employment for other people. I think that's the way that we've always thought about it.
But I mean, they would be... they're inclined to start a business. Is it because they are unable to get work in other ways, or because they're truly entrepreneurs and this is what's driving them? Do you have any sense of that?
I would say that they are truly entrepreneurs. I think our selection process for identifying the women really screens for women who have a genuine desire for growth. So we are absolutely working with women who have established businesses. So we don't typically target women who are startups. So these are women who have a track record and have been built their businesses and growing their businesses, but they've never received any formal training. So everything that they're doing is really on instinct. It's not, it really isn't motivated by any kind of formal training. And so the program is really designed to give them the skills that they need to be able to take that natural instinct that they have and to grow it so that they can build businesses that can thrive over the long term. Now, many of these women, you know, are operating in isolation. Being a woman entrepreneur in many of these countries is a very unusual thing. And the support that they get from the network that this program offers them is transformational for them. It gives them the confidence to be able to continue investing in their business, and I think it gives them, in many cases, growth opportunities through the other women that they're able to meet. Many of these women come from very traditional societies where their families or their communities are disapproving of them devoting time to building something outside of their family time, and having the knowledge to be able to actually grow something that can be successful is important, but also having a community of people who see the world in the same way they do and are encouraging to them can again change their entire outlook. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard the story from so many women in so many different places where the story begins, you know, my husband really didn't want me to start my business. My husband was not supportive of me going through the 10,000 Women program. And then after I got out of 10,000 Women, I learned all these things. You know, my business changed dramatically, and now my husband works for me. It happens in every country all the time. It's such a common story.
So you've had a chance to go to some of these countries and visit and meet these women.
Oh, yeah.
So can you give a specific example of someone that you've met that's really stood out for you?
Brazil is a country that... that I love, and I love visiting. And the story of 10,000 women there, in many ways, I think, sort of mirrors the story of the growth that Brazil has experienced. So many of the women who have gone through our program in Brazil grew up with illiterate parents and grew up in poverty, and sort of through a combination of sheer will and obviously broader economic changes that were happening, were able to advance further than their parents had. But all of them struggled. And there's a woman named Rosana who runs a metal manufacturing business in Belo Horizonte, which is the third largest city in Brazil, whom I met a number of years ago. And she was the youngest of eight children. And when she was 10 years old and she learned how to read, her father, who was an illiterate farm laborer, said to her, okay, well, you know how to read now, so you need to drop out of school and start working to contribute to the family. And she managed to convince him to allow her to put herself through night school while she worked during the day. And she always had a dream of being an entrepreneur. And she started a business which failed, as so many do the first time. And then she managed to build up this metal manufacturing business, which now employs about 30 people, about six of whom are her family members. So she's really, I think, in many ways embodies this very idea of the changes that have happened in kind of a much bigger scale throughout Brazil, but through sort of the sheer will and determination of, you know, her desire to be an entrepreneur, and the training and support she received through a program like 10,000 Women enabled her to really realize that dream. And there are about, I don't know, 30 or 40 other stories I could tell you, but we would be here all day.
So what is in it for Goldman Sachs? What would you say to a cynic who might argue that they're just doing it to burnish its image and make a profit?
Well, we don't make any profit off of 10,000 women or any of our philanthropic efforts. I think the firm very much recognizes, or I should say, tries to align our philanthropy with who we are as a company. And at the end of the day, Goldman Sachs is a company that's about creating economic opportunity and jobs. That's our day job. That's what sort of the money-making part of the firm fundamentally does. And so we wanted to create philanthropic efforts that really aligned with that identity. And as I mentioned, 10,000 Women was really born kind of out of some of, I would say, the sort of globalization and its discontents, which when you think back and from the vantage point of today, it seems almost quaint to think back everything that we've been through since then as a country and sort of as a global economy. But that was really what spurred the initial investment in 10,000 Women, was to create more opportunity for more people to benefit from the global economy. And so I think we've really been able to do that through both 10,000 Women and 10,000 Small Businesses, which is our domestic initiative, which really helps us support small business owners all around the world in the economic opportunities they can bring to their communities.
So what do you, Noah, find personally fulfilling about this job?
Well, my background is really in public service. I started my career in Washington working for Hillary Clinton when she was First Lady. And everything that I've ever done professionally has really been motivated by impact and service. And it was exciting for me to come. I came to Goldman to work on 10,000 Women before it was launched. And I've worked on it the entire time. And it's really exciting to work at a place where the culture and the values are really aligned with the goals of this program, and a place that has resources to be able to invest in a meaningful way to drive impact, and a place that really holds us accountable for impact. I mean, the value, the culture of the place, the expectations, you know, we don't get a break because we're doing something, quote unquote, philanthropic. I mean, we are held to the same standard in terms of impact, and you know, the expectations of what we're able to deliver on is very high. And the efficiencies of the private sector, I think, have really brought a lot to helping ensure that we're able to help more people. And I think there's also a huge platform in coming from Goldman Sachs, which draws attention. A big financial services firm choosing women as a big investment, that sends a very important signal, I think, out in the world, and has really helped, I think, draw attention to these issues in a really meaningful way. And that was a big part of the push that we were able to make around the access to capital piece, how important these issues are, and the fact that we've chosen this as a place where we're investing our dollars, I think sends a signal to governments and nonprofits and other private sector entities that this is a really smart investment. And that's really exciting to me, that we're able to use that power in a meaningful way.
What were some of the challenges in getting this off the ground?
I think a big part of it was, like anything new, like any startup, because that's what we were in the early days, there was a lot of having to prove our value internally and externally. I think people were very, not unlike the questions that you're asking, were somewhere between confused and skeptical as to why Goldman was doing this and our motivations. And so I think demonstrating impact early, developing authentic partnerships that were really focused on impact and results was something that we held ourselves accountable for from the very, very beginning. And there was a lot of scrutiny early on and throughout until we were really able to demonstrate that this was a meaningful program that was had significant opportunities for change for its beneficiaries. You know, developing partnerships in so many countries, working in so many different environments, that's something that was you know, challenging, but also hugely exciting. I mean, the idea that we were helping Goldman develop, you know, have a program on the ground in Afghanistan and in Rwanda and Liberia. I mean, these were places that we went and we visited and we were really engaged in. And those are not countries that are on Goldman's shortlist for opening offices. I mean, this is, the investment was one where we really felt that we wanted to strike a balance between countries that were aligned with where the company saw growth happening and countries where we felt that for a very small investment, we could have a huge impact. So going to Afghanistan it wasn't actually that hard of a sell internally. I think people really saw that there was a big opportunity for us there. But operating in those countries, you know, it's challenging. And figuring out how to adapt our model to China, from China to Afghanistan, was also required a lot of flexible thinking on our part.
Well, countries like Rwanda and Afghanistan seem like potentially difficult places to travel to, especially these days. Are things still running there for the program?
They are. You know, we've evolved. As I mentioned, access to capital is a big piece of our focus now. But we are very, very, very involved in the alumni networks there. You know, in Afghanistan, we have more than 300 women that we've educated with whom we're still in touch. So we are very much focused on delivering strong programs and support for these women who have really sacrificed a lot to be successful small business owners. So we continue to provide support to them and engagement with them.
Well, let's go back in time to your days with the Clintons. Uh-huh. I understand you worked on the first Clinton campaign.
Second
Clinton campaign. Okay. What attracted you to campaign work in the first place?
Well, I graduated from college the summer of the second Clinton campaign and grew up in Washington. And it was a part of a part of the life that my childhood, politics and government. And so it seemed like the kind of the obvious path to go down for me for that first experience. And I grew up in a family where, you know, we would sit around the dinner table talking about what was happening in the news and, you know, both domestically and internationally. And I'd lived overseas with my family. So that was a big part of kind of my point of reference. And I have to say it was the best decision I ever made. Now, you know, I also went to a school where I did not know a single person who actually had a job out of college. I mean, nobody was recruited. People did not come to our campus to recruit so much. Not that it wasn't a good school, but that just wasn't the culture of the place. And I fell into it a little bit just because it was sort of what I knew. But it was really the smartest choice I could have made. And you and I were talking earlier about networking and how it takes a little bit more effort to sort of motivate to network. But the network that I developed out of politics has stayed with me for the last 20 years of my career. Every job I've ever gotten has been connected directly to the people that I met in politics and in government, because it's such an interesting group of people who are drawn into public service, and they all, so many of them, I should say, have gone on to do so many interesting things in so many different sectors. And staying in touch with people has really been a great way for me to learn about all kinds of new opportunities. But also, you know, the job that I have now is really directly connected to a friend that I made when I was 21 years old working in the White House.
And so what is the connection with the friend?
He works at Goldman Sachs. And so when I was looking to for a new job after my last one, I was, you know, going and talking to people, as you do when you're looking for a new job. And I went to sit down with him and I said, so, I'm ready to think about what's next for me. And he said, you know, well, we're about to launch this program called 10,000 Women. I'll give your resume to the woman we just hired. He said, I personally think she should hire somebody internal, but whatever, I'll give her your resume. I always remind
Thanks,
him of that.
Friend.
Yeah, exactly. But he did, and she hired me. So it was great.
So was this after you had worked for Hillary Clinton?
Yes, years later, yeah.
And what were you doing for Hillary? So you have worked for Hillary Clinton.
I did.
You've realized that dream.
I have realized that dream. And actually, my work for Hillary, I worked on the campaign, the Clinton campaign and the Bill Clinton campaign in 96. And then I ended up working in Hillary Clinton's office in 97, from 97 to 99. And I worked in her speech writing office, doing research and some writing in her speech writing office. And then I went on to work at USAID, doing political development in the Balkans around that time. But it was really the work that I did with her that in many ways developed my interest in the women and girls space. She, as we all know, has been a very long time advocate for women's and girls issues. And during those years that I worked for her, she was very focused on microfinance, which was still sort of a relatively unknown space. It was sort of growing in recognition. And so working on speeches for her when she would go visit, you know, microfinance institutions in Bolivia, or, I mean, that was a huge part of what she did. It really kind of captured my imagination and in many ways led me directly to the work that I'm doing today.
What would you say was one thing that you learned from working for Hillary Clinton?
God, one thing that I learned.
Or 10.
You know, she's a person whose passion for issues and whose hard work and commitment was a genuine inspiration, I think, to all of us who worked for her. She is the hardest working, most committed person that I've probably ever come across. She's so deeply steeped in the issues and really focused on how you raise awareness about what you care about. So I think the balance that you need to strike between impact and policy work, however you define it in whatever context you're thinking about it, and how you actually draw attention and elevate awareness about the importance of that work, those two need to go hand in hand in order to really make change. So that can be interpreted a lot of different ways in different settings. It can be advocacy work, it can be policy work, it can be program work, depending on what sector you're in. But I think you can't really affect change if you just focus on one. You have to really be able to do both. Because if you're not able to tell the story of why something's important, it's like a tree falling in the forest to some degree. But if you're not doing good work that's having real impact, you don't have anything to talk about.
So what is the best advice that you've ever received about how to help someone succeed?
I think probably listening to what somebody needs more than dictating what you think they need is the best advice. From the work that I did broadly in global development, I think it's a slippery slope when you're coming in with money and helping people in other communities who are approaching life from a very different perspective. I think understanding what it is that they want and their point of view is probably the most important part of one's ability to actually be helpful. And I think for anybody who does work with populations, underserved populations, that if you approach it with arrogance, it's inevitably going to fail. But I think if you're driven really by a desire to understand what somebody needs and wants, then you'll be able to offer something beneficial.
Well, Noah Meyer, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Noah Meyer, the global head of the 10,000 Women Initiative. That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. And while you're there, I invite you to become a patron of Inflection Point, like Alla Efimova and Barbie Jo Stimm, who are helping bring the voices and views of powerful women to the ears of everyone. And you can too at inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.